Second down and 25. Aaron Rodgers, low snap from Lindsley, the center. He's going to get a hit and buried from behind by Eric Armstead. Boy, did Armstead just jump on his back and devour him.
The San Francisco 49ers dominated the Packers on Sunday night, and their terrifying defense has them on top of the NFC. How they got so good, so fast, and what lessons other teams can learn from their rebuild. Then, Lamar Jackson is the most electric player in the NFL. Can he be stopped? I'm Ina Kimes. It's Monday, November 25th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Dell Small Business. Cool. You guys ready for us?
Oops. For sure.
Bill Barnwell is a senior writer at ESPN and the host of The Bill Barnwell Show, an NFL podcast. Bill, before we get to the Niners, I first want to give a nod to our neighbors to the north in Winnipeg, whose Blue Bombers won the Canadian Football League Grey Cup, which means friend of the show Chris Matthew, who joined us Friday and is a fan of that team. You may recall he famously pledged not to wear pants until the Blue Bombers won it all. Well, Bill, he put on pants. There's video of him on the internet very slowly pulling on a pair of gray Zubas on the field as the crowd looks on and cheers. It was quite a moment.
It really was, Mina. And I will say, Chris Matthew originally decided not to wear pants in 2001, which was a point in our North American timeline where jorts were still okay before John Cena ruined them for everybody. So I don't think he was anticipating it being quite as much of a sacrifice as it actually turned out to be.
Well, let's stay in the North American timeline and talk about the most dominant performance of the weekend. I was looking forward to Sunday night's game, Bill. It was the 9-1 San Francisco 49ers and the 8-2 Green Bay Packers, two NFC powerhouses. But it wasn't really a battle. It was more of a beatdown. The final score was 37-8. Aaron Rodgers passed for, this is not a verbal typo, 104 yards. He was sacked five times. So, Bill, explain to me, how did this happen?
Well, Mina, you remember Super Bowl. What was the Seahawks Super Bowl? What number is it?
Well, let me look down at my arm. It's tattooed, let's see, 48.
Super Bowl 48. You remember early in that game, Cam Chancellor laid out, I believe it was Demaryius Thomas, on the opening drive. The Broncos fired a snap over Peyton Manning's head for a safety, and you kind of got the idea this was how this game was going to go from that point forward. That's what happened in this game, which 43-8 in the Super Bowl, 37-8 on Sunday. You know, the Niners just beat them up. They just beat them up at the line of scrimmage. And from the first strip sack forward, it was just a brutal assault on Aaron Rodgers.
Waving his arms that way. Here comes a blitz. Aaron Rodgers is going to get hit and sacked. Fred Warner will get him down. The ball came out late.
This was a game where the 49ers defense looked like the best defense by far in the NFC.
What I find most compelling about this Niners defense is how quickly they got really, really, really good, right? I mean, back in 2014, the season that Seattle did win that Super Bowl, the Niners defense was excellent. And then it all fell apart so quickly. I mean, first, they lost Aldon Smith, their star pass rusher, to suspensions. A number of not just star players, but all pro defensive tackles and linebackers retired. And by the time you get to 2015, they're at the bottom of the league. 2016, bottom of the league. 2017, bottom of the league. 2018, there's a slight improvement. But I remember, even as recently as last year, people were calling for the defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh, to lose his job. This year, as of last week, they're second in efficiency. How did it all happen so quickly for them?
I can give you four sort of milestones along the way in this rebuild. And they date back to even before Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch were in San Francisco to begin with, and involve moves that other teams made that the Niners couldn't possibly have anticipated at the time. Go back to the 2016 NFL draft. So the spring of 2016, the Rams and Eagles trade up for Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. That pushes the defensive talent in that draft down further in the first round. So Joey Bosa came off the board, Jalen Ramsey came off the board, and that left DeForest Buckner on the board for the Niners at 7, and he is such an underrated player, and he was all over the field on Sunday night, but a dominant interior disruptor, and he's been good even before the rest of the defense around him got good. So then November of 2017, you have Richard Sherman tear his Achilles for the Seahawks, which means the Seahawks don't re-sign him. The Niners, because he was injured, had a shot at signing him.
This summer, they sat down and ironed out an incentive-laden contract that ties Richard Sherman to the 49ers for the next 3 years and means he now will remain in the NFC West.
Signed him to a deal. He's been excellent. Then you get to 2019. January, the Dolphins fire their staff because they're the Dolphins and they do that every couple of years. That freed up defensive line coach Chris Kocurek, who then joined the Niners.
So was it just about amassing talent over time?
There's other stuff. It wasn't just that because history sort of suggested they were going to improve in 2019. You look at the Football Outsiders injury data, the Niners are one of the 8 most injured defenses in all of football. And outside of Kwon Alexander tearing his ACL, they've been really healthy this year. And the strangest thing about their 2018 season, one of the things I looked at when I was gathering data for my column this year on which teams were most likely to improve before the year, the Niners intercepted 2 passes last season. That's not in a game or in a quarter of a season, even in a half of the season. Over the course of the entire season, they had 2 interceptions. That is an NFL record for the fewest interceptions. You should just look into 5 or 6 interceptions a year minimum, and they had 2. So I figured they were going to improve. Just didn't think it was going to be this good and this quick.
So obviously there's a bit of luck involved, but it does sound like the Niners did have a pretty coherent strategy, which was to focus on their defense right at the tops of the last few drafts. And I was wondering, Bill, you know, whether other teams might follow that approach. For example, the Bengals are 0-11, and it's assumed that they're going to take a quarterback, likely LSU quarterback Joe Burrow at this point. But Chase Young at Ohio State is widely seen as the best, really the best player in the draft, but he would be a star pass rusher. And I wonder if, looking at San Francisco's success, the Bengals would be better served going after a player like him.
Okay, Mina, so you played Minesweeper growing up?
Of course.
Of course. So Minesweeper, you just click a random box. You might land on an empty spot. You might land on a mine. Rebuilds are a lot like Minesweeper. You only get so many shots at filling the key positions on your roster, and if you screw those chances up, you might not get a second chance at filling those holes without getting your GM fired or your coach fired or your starting your rebuild all over again. There's so many different places where things could go slightly wrong if you make one wrong move. The Niners, in 2017, they could have drafted Mitchell Trubisky with the 2nd overall pick. That was hardly out of the question. They could have gone after Kirk Cousins, who was the hot rumor when Kyle Shanahan took over, and that might have locked them into a quarterback who might not be as good as Jimmy Garoppolo. There's certainly a lot of different ways things can go wrong.
Okay, so what does this mean for the Bengals?
I think the lesson for the Bengals to learn is to be patient, which is good because they're a very slow-moving, patient organization. But in terms of what the Bengals are going to do with the 1st overall pick, which is obviously the first step in their rebuild, Chase Young is the guy who we sort of think is the surefire, easy pick. You know, if you just pick Chase Young, you're set at pass rusher for the next 10 years with a superstar. But you look at history, look at about the last 15 years or so, and look at the first pass rusher taken in every draft, which is usually a guy taken in the top 5. He's usually pretty good, but rarely is he the number 1 pass rusher in that draft class. We're always, always overconfident in our ability to judge prospects at any position, whether it be quarterback, whether it be kicker, whether it be edge rusher. And this draft and this prospect and Chase Young are no different.
Well, Bill, obviously it did work out for San Francisco. The draft picks, the signings, even if, as you pointed out, they sort of lucked into some of it, right? This defense has rounded into one of the most dominant units in recent NFL history. So let me ask you this. It sounds like you're pretty confident about this Niners defense. Are you confident enough to follow the example of our friend in Canada and not wear pants unless the Niners win the Super Bowl?
Okay. Number 1, I think that's an HR violation if I promise not to wear pants. But number 2, I will promise that I will not wear pants in the country of Canada on the Canadian timeline until the 49ers make it to the Super Bowl with this defense.
Let's take a quick break and then talk about a incredible offensive player, Lamar Jackson, on the other side. The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Now, I would just like to introduce y'all to the man, the myth, the legend, the MVP front runner. If anybody else got to say something different about that, then come see me. Lamar Jackson in the flesh.
Bill, the Rams and Ravens meet tonight on Monday Night Football. Baltimore is, of course, the hottest team in the league. Their offense is first or second in most categories. And at the center of it all is the marvel, the MVP candidate, Lamar Jackson. I'm going to ask you an easy question to start this off. How do you stop Lamar Jackson?
You know me, as a longtime NFL defensive coordinator, I have an easy solution to stopping Lamar Jackson, which is basically just prayer. Maybe he won't show up. Maybe the bus will make a wrong turn on the way to the stadium. That is probably the best way to stop Lamar Jackson. And I think even the idea that you can stop, quote unquote, Lamar Jackson, I think is flawed. And we see that a lot with running quarterbacks where it's, you know, they're one bad game or one adjustment or one genius game plan away from being figured out and revealed as frauds. That's not going to happen here. That's not the case with Lamar Jackson. He's too skilled and does too many things. And you go back to last year's Chargers game in the playoffs where he was terrible.
Third down at 11. Jackson in trouble. A hit, spun, and dropped for a fifth sack today. And this crowd is having none of it.
That was supposed to be the game plan that figured out Lamar Jackson. And it wasn't. It was Ronnie Stanley giving away the run pass cues with his footwork at left tackle. It was the Chargers going with 7 defensive backs is great, but the Ravens, they've added so many weapons and so many pieces that it's absolutely not as simple as just one trick or one scheme.
All offseason, after that Chargers game, you heard, oh, you know, not only we figured him out, but here's what you got to do. You just got to stop the run. Stop him from running. Force him to be one-dimensional. Make him pass the football. And that's all it takes. What has happened this season when defenses have tried that approach?
I mean, you've seen it. It's been bad. It has not worked. He's thrown the ball quite effectively across the board in every single way. There's not one element of the game, there's not one spot on the field, whether it's throwing deep, whether it's throwing short, whether it's throwing to the sidelines, throwing over the middle of the field, he's above average or better in every single quadrant you can find. And then on top of that, the Ravens, like I said, they've added a lot of help to make life easier for Lamar Jackson. They replaced Crabtree, who was one of the slowest players in the league, with Hollywood Brown, who is the 5th fastest player out of 121 receivers in the NFL this season.
Jackson wants to throw, has all day, going deep, down the middle of the field, looking for Hollywood Brown. He's got him! Dolphins 30, leg race 20, and he's going to score! Hollywood Brown!
Behind him, they have Seth Roberts, who is 15th, so they've added a ton of speed, which impacts how you can cover Lamar Jackson. So if you want to play man-to-man coverage, or if you want to play cover four, where it's 4 defensive backs taking 1/4 of the field horizontally, you're going to get Hollywood Brown, who's one of the fastest players in the league, isolated against a defensive back one-on-one. That is a mismatch.
Bill, Lamar's hard to stop because of his weapons, but also because you kind of have to pick your poison with him, right? You can key in on his legs, you can key in on his arm, but when you do that, when you assign, say, a linebacker to spy, it means you make a sacrifice in coverage. So the only quarterback who's really comparable to him in having both of those abilities is Michael Vick.
And there is Vick, as you talked about, John, rolling and launching downfield for DeSean Jackson, who accelerates, caught the opening play, and all the way for a touchdown! 88 yards!
You watched Vick a lot growing up. What did defenses do to stop him? Perhaps are there lessons there?
So it's really interesting because I think there is that obvious comparison, but I think Lamar Jackson is so far ahead right now of where Michael Vick was at this point in his career. He's so much more dangerous and so much more difficult to stop because he's such a more well-rounded player. And you think about Vick, it didn't really consistently work until Vick later, after his jail term, moved on to the Philadelphia Eagles and met up with Andy Reid, who makes everybody into a successful quarterback. But it took him years to kind of grow comfortable as a passer going through progressions. Now, you go to Lamar Jackson in the pros, is actually more built towards his skill set than his college scheme. His college scheme certainly had a lot of designed runs for Lamar Jackson, but a lot of it was pocket passing. A lot of it was going through progressions. So I feel like Lamar Jackson is a combination of the Michael Vick who was running in the first couple years of his career, and the Michael Vick who was an effective passer 10 years down the line with the Eagles at quarterback.
You mentioned how after the playoff game against the Chargers last year, teams looked at that and said, oh, maybe we can learn some lessons on how to stop Lamar from that game. Then he progressed. He evolved like Terminator, right?
Jackson takes the snap. He wants to keep it. Tries to squeeze off right guard and tackle. Pushes his way to the one. Backs in. Touchdown! Lamar Jackson with an unbelievably patient run. And then a burst of power. And the pyrotechnics are firing at the station.
So I was trying to think through this season. Okay, were there any games or losses where he struggled that, you know, teams might be able to take some lessons from? I didn't really think the two losses against Cleveland or Kansas City were super instructive, but his worst game of the season, Bill, was against Pittsburgh. They actually won that game. But Lamar threw three picks. He was sacked several times.
On second down, Jackson to throw, just over 4 minutes left in the half. Nothing there. Pocket closes, wrapped up and sacked. Oh, and TJ Watt celebrates.
He didn't complete a single deep pass. So I went back and I rewatched, trying to, again, figure out what the Pittsburgh defense did. And I noticed a couple of things. They did key in a bit more on the run. They were clogging the middle of the field as much as possible. And in doing so, they managed to neutralize Mark Ingram, the running back, and Mark Andrews, the tight end, who are really his two best and weapons that he uses the most. They didn't blitz a lot. They contained him, and he ended up holding the ball for a bit too long. Do you think there is an answer there in that game for other teams?
Yes and no. I mean, I think that stuff does make sense, but the Steelers are good. Like, they're a really good defense. I think that's the biggest reason why they were able to control Lamar Jackson. When you have the talent advantage and you can inflict that on Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offense, you can probably slow him down, but very few teams in the league have the offense and the defense capable of consistently pulling that off against a Ravens team that, even in addition to Lamar Jackson, looks really good on defense right now too.
So the takeaway is be good. That's what it takes to stop Lamar. Well, tonight's opponent, the Rams, they are good on defense. They were more known for their offense last year, but so far this season, it's actually been their defense, I think, that's carried the team, right? Aaron Donald is still Aaron Donald, destroyer of worlds. They're not ranking that high in sacks, but they're third in overall pressure percentage. Their run defense has been better than last year. And then, of course, they went out and did the big trade for Jalen Ramsey to bolster their secondary. Do you think that this good Rams defense has a shot?
They have a shot. I mean, they absolutely have that kind of top-level personnel to pull this off. They have Corey Littleton, who is a super, super, super underrated player, someone who I think can't hold up in coverage against Mark Andrews. And then, of course, the biggest player, the most important player in this game besides Lamar Jackson is Aaron Donald, because not only does he blow up so many plays in the backfield, he really discourages teams from running zone read plays in the backfield, because you know there's going to be a chance that while your quarterback is deciding whether to hand the ball off or to keep it for himself, Aaron Donald is going to eat that quarterback alive.
So let's say they don't. Let's say all of the ideas we've just come up with, the historical precedent, looking at these games, none of it works against Lamar. This is a primetime game. If he shreds, do you think he becomes the MVP frontrunner?
He probably does become the frontrunner, just because it feels like every single week we're picking a new frontrunner, right? I think with Lamar Jackson, I look at the numbers and he's so unique and he is so different from anybody else in football. As far as his running ability goes, Jackson's generated 31.2 points as a runner. To put that in context, that would make him the number one running back in football. He's better than Dalvin Cook at 29 points. Everyone else is way below those two. And as a quarterback, as a passer, by expected points, he has been about as productive as Tom Brady. So imagine a universe where Tom Brady and Dalvin Cook are combined into one super player. That's Lamar Jackson. And that guy, to me, is a very, very realistic MVP candidate.
Well, Bill, I don't think we solved Lamar Jackson today. But I'm looking forward to seeing if the Rams do tonight and talking to you next week.
Thanks, Mina.
Coming up, how the kicker known as Hot Rod made Georgia football history this weekend.
Whatever you want to protect, nobody has more ways to help keep you safe than ADT, the most trusted name in security. You can customize an ADT security package to help protect your home in a way that works for you and your budget. ADT has HD video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart lights, smart locks, smart thermostats, flood sensors, fire and carbon monoxide detectors, all connected to 24/7 monitoring and controlled by the sound of your voice or the ADT app. So help protect your home today with ADT. Learn more at ADT.com/podcast. Here's another story I want you to know. Anyone who watches college football knows that the kickers are, shall we say, less than reliable. They show up in big moments about as often as a senior with an 8 a.m. class. And like most fans, I dread watching them trot onto the field in clutch situations. Unless it's Georgia's Rodrigo Blankenship. On Saturday, the man who's as famous for his distinctive goggles as he is for his automatic leg kicked 4 field goals in Georgia's 19-13 win over Texas A&M, becoming the highest scoring player in school history. It was Blankenship's final game in Georgia's Sanford Stadium, and he led the team by running through the banner. The crowd went nuts. But while Rodrigo is arguably one of the most recognizable faces in college football, it wasn't always that way. Before he garnered the nickname Hot Rod, before he led the team with 4 field goals in a close win over Kentucky 3 years ago.
This is for the ball game. Georgia wins it.
Field goal is good. Game is over.
Or hit that record-breaking 55-yarder to keep Georgia alive in the 2018 Rose Bowl, which they eventually lost.
Drives it. Wow, Hot Rod. Comes up with 3. That's a Rose Bowl record.
He was a walk-on from Marietta, Georgia, a kid with roots in Brazil who played soccer growing up and started kicking field goals when he was in elementary school. He didn't even receive a scholarship until he was a sophomore, famously booting Georgia to a close win over Notre Dame. And now, he's one of the most famous players in school history. Every time he trots out, it's a true spectacle. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.